Welcome to Season 3, Episode 23 of LOI Weekly with Johnny Ward, Dan MacDonald and Aidan Fitzmaurice this week in the Dublin studio with Dan in Riga waiting on Dundalk's big game to come in the Champions League qualifier. Stephen McGuinness and Emma Connaughton of the PFAI are going to be here for the second half of the show with Aido and I, and we're going to talk about the FAI and League of Ireland sort of think tank at the weekend and various other matters that Stephen and Emma would like to get to. But let's just start by going to Dan, and I should mention also we're in association with Aerosport and Independent.ie. Welcome, Dan, to the show. How are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm good, John. Over in Riga, as you mentioned, not exactly sweltering European weather. I mean, Aido would know what a lot of these trips are like, and you've obviously been on a couple yourself. You always imagine, like, you know, an Eastern European country in the middle of July, it's going to be sweltering or whatever, but it was lashing rain all morning, Tuesday morning here. A bit balmier this afternoon, but not spectacular, not in the sense that, you know, heat and humidity would be a massive talking point. Now, the temperatures are meant to actually improve, so that could prove to be wrong, but certainly today it's sort of a dull enough day.
You spoke to Robbie Benson as well.
Yeah, just before at Dublin Airport yesterday, before travelling out, I spoke to Robbie Benson. And, you know, we obviously alluded to last week's game, which was, I think, still quite underwhelming for people. I think as much as I said on last week's show, actually, I think that once Dundalk didn't concede, I felt they would go through. Didn't concede in the first leg, I felt they would go through. It was still slightly disappointing. But I spoke to Robbie Benson, and he did make the point initially that actually Dundalk's record in second legs is generally better than it will be in first legs, and he maybe explained why.
You don't know as much about each other, and you're just kind of feeling each other out. There's only so much you get off the video and comparing different leagues. Whereas when you come up against each other, you can see, you know, okay, this fella, he wasn't as quick as we thought he was, or he doesn't get as high as he might have done in the league. So once you play each other, once you kind of get a feeling where you can give it to play. And second legs, we have been better in the first legs for the main part, so last year aside. But we're confident going out there, and hopefully we can execute our game plan and come on top.
I mean, as the seeded team, is there a bit of, I don't know, is pressure the word that comes with it this time? Because there's a lot of expectation around this tie this year. Is it a different feeling than, say, going to play Bate or someone where you are very clearly the underdog? Is it a slightly different feeling around the tie?
A little bit. I suppose when you're, there's the case of nothing to lose when you play a really top team, whereas when the expectation levels are higher, yeah, I suppose you do feel a bit under pressure to get through. But look, there's no easy games in the Champions League. I think there's only three teams have gone through first round of Champions League from Ireland in the last 10 years only. So it's very difficult, even though there's an extra round now where we are seeded and we expect to go through. But it is difficult. And there's a safety net of the Europa League as well, even though it's not where you want to be.
Yeah.
How long you can stay in the Champions League, you know, that's the better for us. But just, I suppose, people's expectations are probably a lot higher than ours are, in the sense that they think it's a walk in the park, this first round against the Latvian team, whereas it's not really like that. We expect to go through if we play to our potential, but I think people will see it as a huge, major shock and upset if we don't go through, where not really the case.
Was there a point where you thought you wouldn't make Europe? I mean, like, do you know?
No. It was always a couple. 12 weeks was the target the surgeon gave us, and it was a pretty aggressive target. But it was always just a little. I had to get the second off to get something taken out that was giving me a bit of a problem, and that made a big difference when that cleared up. But no, it was never really an issue. It was just, I suppose, for myself, just would I be able to play to the level that I had been before would have been a question. And I remember a couple of weeks before I went back, and I was doing a couple of light jogging drills and just small easy change of direction stuff, where I was watching lads playing 8v8s and training, and I was just like I'm so far away from that right now. And that was only about 4 or 5 weeks ago. But the more you do it, the more you play and train, you just kind of get confidence back in your in your in the place that you had injured, and that helped.
When he came on, Edo, he definitely seemed to make a big difference. I felt anyway. Dundalk seemed to have more of a rhythm.
Yeah, they weren't like themselves. They I don't know, was it nervous and a lot of possession, not knowing what to do with it. And you wonder, a lot of talk before the game, but the first match in Europe in a long time without Stephen Kenny in charge. And Vinnie Perth more than once mentioned that he's not a European debutant. He's been around a long time as a player. They just didn't have that. And I don't know what it was in the night that maybe showed them too much respect. I don't know what it was at Riga, but there's definitely more to come from Dundalk. They're better than they showed in that. The fear is how much more is there in Riga. Will they feel they're at home? They're looking to go through as well. They've invested in their team. As Vinnie Perth said, I think they signed 3 or 4 players in between the draw being made and the match. So they're pretty serious about it, but I do think there's more in. And if just getting Benson on, just a few things weren't right. Pat Hoban didn't look in good form. Pat McElhenney, I don't know if he's fully fit. So a few things went against him. So in a way, it's fortunate they didn't concede. Losing Cleary as well at half time didn't help. Sorry, Chris Shields in the clash with Cleary. But there's more to come, and maybe Benson can do over 90 what he did over half an hour in the first game.
Dan, that's the key point, isn't it? That, like, if you look at some of Dundalk's players, there's no doubt they can play better in the second leg.
Yeah, no, they certainly can. I mean, the point has been made. I mean, Robbie Benson also not in that clip, but Robbie Benson also mentioned that, you know, the pitch over here is due to be it's a new surface. It's actually more suited to maybe intricate passing and 1-2s around the penalty area and stuff that the dog like to do. And I think against a team that actually sits in on the pitch at Oriel, they can actually, if they're disciplined and organised, they can restrict the home team. And Aidan mentions the amount of possession Dundalk had. Riga were happy for them to have the possession and almost said, play through us if you can. And the Dogs just couldn't get the rhythm going. They just weren't really capable of opening the game up to any degree at all. And there probably would be hope amongst the sort of travelling support here that actually Riga show a bit more attack and ambition. And as a result, that will leave more space. Now, we are speaking on Tuesday afternoon. You talk about space. One of the things that obviously, a strength of the Dundalk side, that if the game becomes a bit more stretched, is that you can use the pace of Michael Duffy on the break. He was actually found it pretty hard last week. He was almost double marked at times and almost from a standing start trying to make stuff happen. There is still a question mark over whether Michael Duffy's going to make it here, because his partner's expecting a child, and obviously I hope that everything goes well with that. He was at the airport. He had to turn around and go back. And you know, arrangements have been made to get him out here for the game tomorrow, all going to plan. But speaking now, that's just obviously a small bit of a doubt at this stage. So that would be a slight concern if they were to not have his services. But I think, you know, Vinnie does have a few decisions to make. Even just take that situation out of the equation and assume that he makes it. Do you go with Benson from the start? I think he seems to be in good shape, but there's still an element of a risk after a long break. Do you bring Andy Boyle in, because he did quite well in his time on the pitch? Do you start with a Mountney as a more conservative right-sided option, or do you go with a Jamie McGrath out there or a Daniel Kelly? There's a few question marks, a few decisions to be made. Even Massey and Jarvis would be another one, I think, that might be up for debate, I think, this time around. So we've been told Massey's doing the press conference today, so I don't know if that means anything, but sometimes it does. So there's definitely big decisions to be made, and as Aidan mentions, yeah, Vinnie Perth has a lot of European experience, but he didn't make the final calls. And I think, like, the final calls that are made here are going to be pretty significant in a tie that is bloody significant for the club. It's not to be don't want to engage in hyperbole, but it is an obvious fact. I mean, this is a big game.
It's so big, Edo, when you look at the ramifications of defeat versus ramifications of victory, and the very real possibility that they might avoid Carabeg as well, because they only drew nil all away in Tirana. And all of a sudden you're thinking, if Dundalk get through here, they have a real chance of possibly qualifying at the very least into the next round again.
Yeah, I mean, group stages, that hasn't been mentioned. I mean, even when someone like Celtic struggled to make the group stages, you realise how hard it is for Dundalk. So I think a lot of things in their favour. As I said, the fact that they can play an awful lot better. I think the location as well, obviously, Dan is there, like, an idea tomorrow. I've been a lot of these club games in the Baltics over the last couple of years, and the one thing you find is it's the opposite of a cauldron of hate. I don't know, what maybe Dan might more idea in terms of crowds. I was there in Lithuania when Shamrock Rovers played Panevėžys, and there was nearly as many away fans as were home. I've been Latvia twice with Pats, and one game they played Olympus a couple of years ago, beat them 1-0. There was more than 100 home fans, so I think that's in their favour. It's not like they're going into you know, a difficult place with 4,000 or 5,000 home fans. I don't damn might know more, but I wouldn't expect to be
a certainly huge not. That's not the anticipation, as you mentioned. And actually, I should mention before I forget, there was actually quite a few compliments for our Latvian guest on
absolutely,
last week's
big time.
Pod, Edmonds, who called it absolutely right in terms of how Riga would approach the game. But he also did allude to the fact last week that there won't be a big crowd over here. And certainly last night, I sort of popped into a place next to here. And bizarrely, the guy working behind the bar is also works for the local Latvian news agency. And he's starting off his career there. And so doing a bit of bar work on the side. But he was just saying that every home game for a Latvian team in Europe, it's always the away fans that make all the noise, that they're the boisterous ones. He said, apparently their ice hockey fans are known to be a bit lively and a bit rowdy. But I think Dynamo Minsk were here last week playing one of the Europa League sides. And I think there was almost a mini pitch invasion. And the locals were all a bit perturbed by all of this. That while there's interest in football, there isn't a sort of a passion in it, in the sense that they're going to create, as you mentioned, a cauldron of hate. This isn't going to be Legia Warsaw away. It's not even going to be Derry away, you know, in terms of atmosphere generated by the locals. And there is some talk to be 350 Dundalk fans over here, so they'll make all the noise. But I suppose, I mean, there's obviously, you know, there's a pressure and expectation that comes with their expectation as well. But you would hope that would be channeled as a positive thing.
I was disappointed enough in Dundalk. Do you think they're as good as the 2016 team that went so far in Europe? There, you look at the likes of kind of Horgan, Macmillan, and Stephen O'Donnell, I suppose, who are not around anymore. But they never really clicked into gear, I thought, last week.
No, that's what I'm saying. There is more to go. Was that nervousness? Was it, you know, another point Vinnie Perez was making, that the grass pitch in Latvia will suit them better, that maybe there's something about the games that are, a lot of the really good performances in Europe have come in Tala. So I don't know if it's not home. So there's more to come. I mean, I think key man for me, I think Sean Gannon, I think he probably has been Dundalk's best player this year. The real threat from Riga was, I can't remember his number, but Popescu, the French winger, he thought he was a real threat.
Nearly scored as well.
Yeah, and just in terms, he's the kind of player who he's so, just the way he plays, he could get you on. Whoever's marking him could be on a yellow card the first time. An awful lot depends on the referee. I thought the referee, I think he was from Montenegro last week, was pretty good, let most things go. But if you have Sean Gannon on a yellow card after 5-10 minutes, to me that kind of changes your game plan, because you're on alert then for 80 minutes. So if they, Sean Gannon, he got the goal in Tala that beat Rovers a couple of weeks ago. He is key. If he can control that back, the big decisions, as Dan mentioned, at the back, does Boyle come in? How do you fit Andy Boyle into the team? Are they as good as it's hard to compare teams. You know, Vinnie Perez was asked about this last week and he said it's like trying to compare Messi and Maradona. You know, they're different eras, there's different, even though it's only a couple of years. Perez's view is that this team has more about them than the 2016 team. But you look at what those players did. The fact that a couple of them went on to play for Ireland, Boyle and Horgan went on to play for Ireland. Macmillan, you know, doing reasonably well in the SPL. Not going so great at the moment, but there is more. I think there's more in them. And can Vinnie Perth and the staff, can they get that out of them? Sit around and there. I think team meetings will be key. Why were we so tame? Why were we just not lacking? Where was our spark last week? Maybe they just had an off day. Hoban, as we said, just didn't look sharp. McElhenney, maybe fitness. A lot of things didn't click, that this is their chance to click and show that they can deliver what that team did in 2016 and play with that verve and that passion and that confidence. The confidence that team in 2016 have, I didn't see that last week. So hopefully that's the challenge for Vinnie Perth and John Keel and Rory Higgins to get that out of them.
It should be remembered that they drew against FH at home and it took them a bit of time to get going in that campaign. And like the only thing, Dan, for Hooban, this is a huge game, I think, because, you know, I think even by his standards, he's had a patchy season. His record in Europe isn't great without being too bad. He's gotten a couple of very important goals. Wasn't at his best last week, but a goal from Hooban in this game would just be so, so important.
Yeah, no, I think it would be fantastic for him. You know, there's obviously, you know, there's speculation around his contract at the moment, which can't be ignored, really. It's obviously a talking point amongst any fans that you stop and you speak to. So I don't think you need to be Scoops McScooperson to be interested in that story, you know. And it's something that you have to, like, it's not ideal, right? And there's certainly, when you have your talisman, the guy who scored, you know, sort of an unbelievable amount of goals, the club's all-time record goal scorer, must be remembered, in a very short period of time. So it's strange that there's this question mark over him, but it does exist to a degree at the moment, as crazy as that might sound. Now, in a strange way, I think McMillan was someone who was really suited to European games. Like he had an amazing record in Europe, a better record in Europe nearly than he had domestically. And I think maybe for that solo striker job in Europe, maybe his style, he could sort of get down the sort of channel sometime and give teams problems in behind a bit. And maybe Hubin sometimes, and he's a very good hold-up player, but there was times last week where he was frustrated. He wasn't quite getting the ball. You know, he's good with players around him, and they weren't getting bodies around him at times. And, so you can analyse it to death. But I think also, ultimately, that he wasn't his best last week. And I think I'm sure he'd probably admit that too, without having got, you know, sterling service. So for him, it's big. I mean, you do wonder if this game is nil-all tomorrow, and it's 60 minutes into the game, is there a temptation to bring Georgie Kelly in there at some stage? Now, I think the problem as well, in the past, like, you've had Hubin and McMillan who complemented each other as two strikers, and even Kilduff was a bit different to McMillan to some degree, whereas some of Kelly's attributes are similar to Hubin, you know, so it's not necessarily a massively different option. So would he be tempted to go for two up front at some stage in the game? I think maybe even last week, if they didn't have to waste the substitution on the Shields injury, would they have gone that route? But yeah, I think maybe like Hubin scores tomorrow and he gestures to anyone who's given him grief and it's over as a talking point for now. But I think once the contract is unsigned, this is a story that's going to linger for a while, and it probably will be a pretty timely time for him to get a goal.
We don't have you for much longer, so briefly, do you predict them to go through?
Do I expect them to go through? I do. I'm not madly confident, but I guess I have to stick with what I said last week, that I felt if Riga didn't score in Oriel, I felt that Dundalk would score over here. And I think one goal for them here should probably be enough, even if it's a nervy 1-1 or whatever it might be. So I think so. I think they're capable of doing it, but like I'm not... there have been times in the past around games where you'd be more bullish and think, yeah, they're going to do it. I'm not getting that vibe yet. And maybe just a few question marks over this group at the moment, and hopefully they can answer them.
Myself and Ado will chat more about the European games when Dan has gone, because he doesn't have that much time with us. But Rovers and Bran, Dan, the only realistic, you would imagine, game in which one other Irish team might go through. Rovers fully deserving of a 2-2 draw last week and really should be confident enough getting the job done.
Yeah, no, I watched that game on air. It was definitely... I think actually both Dundalk and Rovers were sloppy.
Rovers didn't play that well. Rovers didn't play that well.
Like, it comes back to what I said a couple of weeks back, that I just don't think that the teams get tested regularly enough in the league, really. They're not getting a high enough test from everyone on a week-to-week basis. And I think and that's why you talk about a team that's, like, good defensively at home, but then actually to go to Europe and they give away chances. I just think, like, it's a step up in level, and maybe just there's just the application wasn't there. But at the same time, like, neither side lost, and I think they've got a chance to almost improve in their performance. And I think in the second half, Rovers still played pretty well. I think they actually tightened things up a bit, and I felt they were more in control in the second half than they were in the first half, which was a bit open. Which is not what you would have thought with the respective sides' goal scoring or defensive records in their league. But they held it together well. I thought the best part of the game was actually their play leading up to the equaliser. It was the 98th minute. 2-1 was a good result. Still, you know, you could argue. And, you know, even just Jack Byrne keeping the ball well, the midfield players, I think it was Bulger or McAniff, you know, they won the corner with good play. So they earned it. And I would really hope in Talla, you know, to reflect the maturity, the growing maturity of this Rovers side. I mean, they had the near miss against the Swedish side last year. It's a different order of ties and that they're home second time round. But I just think they need to manage this game well. And if they manage this game well, I think they're really capable of going through. So that's encouraging. Cork and Pats, like, Pats were probably up against it, although we have done well against Swedish sides in recent years. So when a Swedish side looks way ahead of an Irish team, you're looking at that, you know, think, yeah, you know, our mid-table teams aren't at a great level. And Cork, I mean, that's just, there's no good spin on the Cork thing. I know we had Declan Carey on. I know to some degree there's an element of writing off this season, you know, in the sense that they just need to regroup and a lot of players out of contract. And but it was still a chance to play Rangers in a big European tie. And I just thought that there would be more in them. And to lose to a side that's effectively in their pre-season, who scraped past the Welsh side in pre-season, and to lose badly at Turner's Cross, I know Derry hammered them down there. So, I mean, you know, the team from Luxembourg aren't the only team to win relatively comfortably down there from speaking to people who are at it. But Jesus, it's not great. You know, there's no good spin on that. And, you know, you never know. They might bounce back and get an early goal over there and make things more interesting. But they'd want to nearly. I mean, they're a full-time operation. Like, you're putting money into a full-time 52-week operation. That I just think in Europe they shouldn't be putting in abject performances like that, and that certainly seems to be the word that was a fitting description of how they played.
Before you go, who do you expect to get through then from the four?
Yeah, well, as I said, I think Dundalk and Rovers are capable of doing it. But like, I'm not madly optimistic. Like, it wouldn't take much for both to lose as well, you know. So I think the margins are fairly fine. I mean, Brann still have some good attacking players, although that's actually, I think, been one of their weaknesses at home this year. They're very capable of scoring in Tallaght, so I think Rovers are going to need to score too. You know, I don't think it's going to be a nil-all job to get them through. So, I don't know. I can predict that they will, but I don't think anyone could say with certainty what's going to happen. I don't think you can be definitive about it. I think it's going to be pretty close. I think both ties with 15 minutes to go should probably have a bit of spice left in them, that's for sure.
Who's under more pressure here, Stephen Bradley or Vinnie Perth? And kind of how important is it to the two managers that they get through?
It's more important for Vinnie Perth, ultimately. I think, you know, if Rovers go out, as much as, you know, the European games, the Europa League games are great. I mean, they're good, they're great for players. But it's almost impossible to get through the four rounds to get to a group stage. So really, you're trying to make as much money as possible and try and improve your seeding as much as possible. So that, you know, like Rovers know if they win the league this year, they're going to be unseeded next year in the Champions League. Whereas, you know, it's a bit different for Dundalk. So they need to still build their European record up. And it's important, but it's not the be all and end all. I think winning a league or a cup is more important for Stephen Bradley this year. But Vinnie Perth, I think it's different. I think you can't avoid the fact that they have an American ownership now who want to see the club progressing in Europe. And it's one thing to lose to a team like Bate Borisov and Rosenberg or whoever. I think, you know, even a Larnaca, I think there's an understanding that you're up against it there, and that's fine. But I think, as a seeded team, to lose to a side from Latvia, as good as they might be and as well resourced as they might be, I think that's a problem, because I still think come the end of the year, even if Dundalk were to retain the league, there would be an element of a question mark of, well, yeah, but they didn't do a huge amount in Europe. And I think that may be unfair, but I think that's the realistic expectation that exists around the club. So I think there's way more pressure on Dundalk this week than there is in Rovers, that's for sure, yeah.
I think that's why Pete came in as well, to progress in Europe, with all due respect. There is a lot of pressure on. Dan, thanks a million for your time.
Thanks, lads. Enjoy it. I'll talk to you soon.
Edo, you were at the Pats game, as was I, so let's start with that. Of all the sort of four results, this was the one where you could kind of say they were playing against a team that were probably just better than them.
You could see from the start, 9 internationals, and so often you've seen Irish clubs playing a Scandinavian team like that. They get maybe scoreless draw, 1-0, 2-0 win. You know they've more in them. If Pats had scored, I think Norrköping would have scored another 2 or 3. They were just better in every way. And there was a lot of focus on the two players with the famous dads, Tern and Larsson. But the number 7, Franson, ran the game for me. I thought he was superb. I know he gave the ball away that nearly let Pats in for one of their chances. But just same thing with Pats, just no real creativity. Didn't really work the keeper. They kind of promised a really special European night at Richmond Park. It just didn't feel like, I think everyone just... There's no disgrace in losing, but they're a better, Dan used the word phrase, well-resourced earlier on, but everything about Norrköping is a couple of levels above Pats. They still should have done better. Conor Clifford said after, we all let ourselves down. He included himself in that. They didn't get close to them. But still, I just think I think it's going to be a tough night in Sweden. I think if Norrköping want to turn it on, they could score 2 or 3 or 4.
The sliding doors moment was the tackle on Gary Shaw. obviously the position I was in, it was the stonewall of stonewall penalties that I've seen this season. When you look at it from the angle of the camera, it didn't look quite as kind of clear cut. And Harry Kinney did mention afterwards, I do have sympathy for Pats because they're 1-0 up probably there, and that's a massive start for them. Even if they lose, even if they get a 1-1 draw or something like that.
Yeah, it's hurt that's so early as well, 13 minutes, but it can maybe, would that have been given in the ref? As I said, I thought the ref in the Dundalk game was fair. Pats will look at that. I still think Norrköping would. They just had too much of them. Sometimes you look at the other team, look at what they had on the bench. Everything about them, I think, was better, and they cope with difficulties. That wouldn't be part of the game plan going down 1-0 to a penalty after 13 minutes. I think they would have come back from it. So I think that wouldn't have even changed. I think it's Pats are looking for crumbs of comfort and think, what if they would have been rattled? They're not the kind of side that get rattled. You know, as 9 internationals, players like that don't get rattled.
They were a classy side.
Yeah.
And you found that they had that gear in them. I think it was Conor Byrne was saying they were feeling Pats out for a lot of the game, and then they just kind of they pounce when they made one mistake.
That's what they do. And you look at the lead up to the goal, you know, even the chance that Larson had. Larson didn't score, but one of the chances he had, it was about 5 passes into him, and just that patient passing. And it's just that it's a different experience of football. And Dan is talking about not being tested in the league, and their test playing the like of Ike or the teams that they play, they're 6th in the league, so they're not outstanding team by Swedish standards. But the level that they play at, they're used to those, and going to play someone like Ike in a big league game and maybe going for a score draw or you know, going for a 1-0 win, they do that. It reminds me, a couple of years ago, Pats played, I know Denmark's different to Sweden, but Pats played Odense, I think 2007, 2008. It was quite similar. Home game was quite tight. It was 0-0 draw, and Pats went over there thinking they can do something. They got tanked 5-0 over there. Could have been 10 only for Barry Ryan. I just think that they just had that class about them, and you realise how we talk about trying to lift the game here, and you realize it's only when you go to somewhere like Norrköping. I haven't been there, but I've been to a lot of those Scandinavian clubs, and you realize on the field, off the field, we're probably 20 years behind.
Sadly enough, the 3-5-2, I thought it let them down. I didn't think that the players really implemented it. But if you look at Harry Kenny now, they're 4th in the table, which they're far from guaranteed to get at the end of the season. Brandon Meal is not playing at the moment. Chris Forrester just hasn't started at all for them, or hasn't played well, really. Their two strikers have a handful of goals between them. So there are, for the amount of sort of probably resources he's had, it's been a patchy season.
Yeah, Forrester has been let. They just haven't been able to get that out of him. What the player Chris Forrester can be, and the player he's shown for St. Pat's since he joined them this year, are just day and night. What he could do, he should be the key player in the league. And he just hasn't done that for St. Pat's. It was a huge blow for him last week because he enjoyed the European games, but his first spell at Pat's, and that was his chance. And the fact that he didn't start, and then they made 3 changes, and wasn't even one of the subs, that would have been a big blow to Chris. But they tried 2 up front, and there's a lot of talk about, if you look at Cork, I think that's 7 European games in a row now, Cork without scoring. I don't think they've scored in Europe since Sean Maguire left. That a lot of talk around the game at the moment. You look at the under-19s the other day, needing a goal from midfield. Where are the goals coming from? And there is a bit of talk. That's an outcome of 10 years of everybody playing with one up front, that maybe go back to playing 2 up front. The old, you know, spirit of Ireland at the World Cup in 2002, that maybe go back to that, go away from the Dutch model or whatever you might call it. Pats tried that with the 2 and it didn't work. So it's not just Pats, everyone is looking for goals. Look at Bowes now, haven't scored in 3, Cork 7 in a row in Europe without scoring. I think it was brave enough of Harry to try the 2 up front, but didn't work. They just didn't have the confidence. Mikey Drennan had a good shot, you know, in the second half, and you know, it went into the shed. They just lacked that confidence, and that can come from a Chris Forrester who's on form. As I said, you're descent the main man for Norrköping, the number 7 in midfield, who just, everything went through him. He just sprayed passes around. Pats didn't have that.
Last season, Derry were the team probably that went into Europe, and you weren't confident that they were going to do much because they were a bit of a mess in the league. Cork's result was shambolic, really. Like, they're playing a bang average team, gave away 2 horrendous bad goals, 7 games in Europe without scoring. I as Dan said, there's no way of sugarcoating this, and the potential to play Rangers, like a team that are probably beatable and a huge name, not that Cork would probably be in the shape to beat them, but this is I just don't know where Cork are at the moment, financially or otherwise. I'd be a bit worried about where they're going to be for the next few years, and this was no help at all.
No, as a club, and as there's always 2 sides, was a team where they're going, but also as a club, and they still have huge advantages down there. They have that whole Munster area more or less to themselves. I know Waterford are there, but they've such a catchment area in terms of support. They're still in a much better place than they were clearly 10 years ago when the fans took over, in terms of their sponsorships, the money coming in. You look at their links with UCC, there's an awful lot going on at the club. But they just can't get it right on. And you trace it back to the day. Have they been the same club since Sean Maguire left? You know, kind of just about got over the line in terms of the league. They were by no means a one man team, but Sean Maguire he scored the goals that won them the league. He scored a lot of their goals in Europe when they had a decent run. And this is Cork, who only what 2-3 years ago were capable of beating Häcken, a Swedish team. And you would fear for this Cork City team if they played a Swedish team at the moment. It's they still have huge potential. They could still get 3,000 for a European game. Maybe they should be looking for double that. Maybe shouldn't be accepting having 3,000. Yeah. It's still 3,000 punters on it. And when it's very, very hard to get people out to pay into sporting events. But I think as a club, maybe what they need to do is focus on this new board. A lot of, you know, change of manager, that John Caulfield was there for a long time, been a lot of changes to try and stabilise and decide where they're going as a team. It needs to be freshened up. Maybe they just need something. But I think they would have hoped that Europe could have done that, because having Rangers, having Steven Gerrard, yeah, that match would have been live on Sky. The boost that would have given the club in terms of profile is clearly gone. The league is clearly gone. Their whole season now rests on the FAI Cup. You know, an early exit, and you're looking, Cork season could be over in August. So it's there's a lot going on off the field, that's right. As I said, and they do this difficult for clubs. The FAI will know this experience as well. When things are going bad on the field, you forget about all the good things that are happening. There are good things happening in the background of Cork, but just at the moment, the team just can't match that.
It's a kind of a calamity of a collapse, though, when you think about it, that where they were last season, as much as they weren't as good as they were, but they're a team now that in another season might actually be struggling to not be in the bottom two if the other two teams were a bit better. Their midfield, watch them against Bowes. I remember Greg Bulger saying he found it hard to play with Rovers because of the Cork system and the way he wasn't really passing the ball. But like their midfielders, when I was down at the Bowes game, they didn't really look like they wanted to get on the ball. They have nobody to put the ball in the back of the net. And if they don't have the money to maybe reinvest, I'd wonder where Cork would be in the next few years against teams that are rapidly passing them out.
But more investment, and they do have the option. They do have a lot of young players, particularly at the back. I know there's been a talk about McNulty's there a long time, and is that how long more will Mark McNulty be number one down there? There's a lot of. They do have young players, so maybe a sale, you know, a Sean McLaughlin or a Conor McCarthy or something like that, a big sale with big revenue, the lift that would give the club could bring them to another place. They can offer full-time football. They had the conditions to bring the centre-half from Bowes.
Casey.
They still have the resources to make
stadium and all that.
To convince him. They have a training ground, they have a stadium, they have enough resources to bring players down and get them to relocate from Dublin to Cork. So they do have advantages. When a club has that, you look at Linfield being able to bring in Bastianeri. When you have the resort to be able to go to a player and put an offer on the table that will convince a player to move from Dublin in Casey's case, or to Belfast in the case of Airy, when you have that, so they do have resources, but they need to they just need to get it right. That's why I thought this Europe was their chance. Maybe just get it going and play Rangers. They wouldn't have beaten Rangers. You know, Progress beat Rangers a couple of years ago, but to give Rangers a rattle and just lift the club, and that hasn't happened. So when you're relying on the FAI Cup to save you, it's you're in trouble.
I watched the Rovers game before the Pats game, and I think a few of us were kind of huddled around the laptop, and 2 minutes into 2 minutes into injury time, it looked like it was fizzling out, and then my screen went blank for about 2 minutes. I don't know, it was a dodgy 4G or whatever. And then when it came back, they were all celebrating the goal. So I was like, oh, happy days, Rovers have scored. But I didn't think Rovers played that well, to be honest. I thought they can play an awful lot better. And the funny thing, if Brann have a good defensive record in the Norwegian league, it would lead me to wonder what the standard is like there, because Brann were not good at the back and their keeper was all over the shop.
I think they just had an off day. I was speaking to somebody from Rovers the other day, an official, not somebody from the team, who they're a bit worried about the home leg, because they just think that, not within the squad, just around generally in the support, people think it's done. You know, we got a draw, we came through it, we have two away goals, and that the fear is that Brann, a bit like Dundalk, you know, there's more to come from them. The fear is that there's a lot more to come from Brann, that was a bit of a shock for them. I think we focus sometimes on the Irish clubs looking at the money, and, you know, clubs like Brann, they're serious about progressing in Europe as well. They will look to, a club like Brann Bergen would have ambitions of being in the group stages. So there is more to come from them. They can play an awful lot better, and that is the fear that Rovers, that's going to be a problem for Stephen Bradley I think he'll do that. That's a problem for managers just in general around the club, the support, that just, you know, this isn't a done deal. You know, it's not going to be party time on Thursday night. They do have work to do, and how much better can Brann play?
Yeah, like I'd agree with you there, because I think they may have caught Brian a bit on the hop, but like Rovers can look at and say, you know, Aaron Green missed basically an open goal in the first half. He missed from outside the box where he should have scored, and you know, the penalty they gave away was very, very sloppy. Rovers see this now as a huge opportunity, I think.
Yeah, the fact that they're, you know, and I didn't see much of the game, I only saw clips, but I mean, it's like that's the kind of game where we talked about Forrester for St Pat's. This is a game where somebody, I know Lopez was the hero in Bergen, but this is where Jack Bourne, I think, will look at this to say, a lot of players sometimes, I think, look at games like that. Keith Fahey was a bit like that with Pat's run 10 years ago, that this is my chance. I know when Pat's were playing Hanover, Chris Forrester kind of felt the same. This is my stage. I know there's people watching this. And I think Jack Bourne will feel like that. He's had a lot of knocks, a lot of blows, a lot of questions about him the last couple of years. He had the boost there early the season when McCarthy saw him against Sligo and called him up. But this is his chance. And that's what people always feel, that in terms of how you judge a player, foreign clubs will not sign somebody on the basis of how they do in the domestic league, because they do not feel that Finn Harps, UCD or Cork City will give you enough of a test. It's how you do against a good side like that. So St Pat's haven't done it, but if somebody like Jack Bourne is serious about progressing his career, I think this is a chance for him. I think Jack Bourne will go out there and say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take this game by the scruff of the neck. I am going to dominate this. I'm going to dominate this game. He'll be the man looking to take the set pieces. He takes most of them anyway. I know Kavanagh scored from a free kick. Sean Kavanagh scored from a free kick recently. But I think it's Jack Bourne's chance to just take the game by the scruff of the neck and show Europe what a player he can be.
And just finally, the strength of their bench as well, without Ferrugia even being available. And Aaron McAniff is just coming back. Watts came on. That could really be key as well.
Yeah, I mean, the back four, you know, picks itself, the midfield, that's always going to be and for Bradley, what does he do with McAniff? Cummins, you know, it's going to take him time to bed in. Green would have more experience in terms of he's been at the club longer, he's more experienced in Europe, he's played an awful lot of games in Europe.
It's funny you say fours, when they went three at the back actually in Bran, which was a new departure, and played two wing backs.
Okay,
which was, I actually can't remember what the last time they played that, which was a fairly bold move to do, but obviously just felt it might suit that particular game.
Yeah, man. They got away because, you know, the two away goals and Pico Lopez got them out of jail at the end. But, you know, Bradley has the track record for doing that. Sometimes he's not nailed down. He's not just wedded to the way somebody like Liam Buckley was wedded to a formation that he played that way. No matter what happened, he's going to play that way. Bradley can play different ways. So the fact that he has options in midfield, I think he really is going to think, and how do you get your best players on? The fact that you got somebody like Gary O'Neill on the bench, Ferrugia, they don't have the moment, but McAniff, do you bring him back in? How fit can he be? What do you do up front? You know, do you work Carr for 60 minutes and hope Carr can break them down, or do you go for Cummins? It'll be one of them. I think it's midfield is where they win it.
Do you think they'll get through?
I think they will, yeah. Mm. But it'll be nervous and an early goal. I can see Brown scoring early. So it is. God, it's going to be. I think Rovers will get through. I think Dundalk will get through, but I think the other two are gone.
Mightn't be fair to say to Bowes fans, whatever, but if you are available, try to go along to the game. I think it's very important for the coefficient and for Irish football in general, because there is a very strong chance none of the four teams are going to get through.
That's in the danger area. It's an equaliser right at the death from Shamrock Rovers, and this time it is Pico Lopez who scores. It's 2-2, a minute of injury time to play, the perfect delivery from Jack Byrne once again, and there is that man, Roberto Lopez.
And we're now going to welcome Emma Connaughton, who's the player development manager of the PFAI, new to the role, and Stephen McGuinness, fairly regular guest on the show from the PFAI. How are you getting on, guys?
Good, yeah, good. Just back from Sligo.
Yeah.
Just landed.
What was happening in Sligo?
Just a club visit. We've done, I think it's six or seven.
Today was number six.
Yeah, so we've done the six club visits in the last just over a week. So we've been to Derry. We've been to Waterford, Bowes, Shells, Bray, Sligo today. Mm. So just we do three club visits a year. This is the middle visit. We've hired, obviously, Emma as a player development manager, so it's important that we introduce her to the players, to the squads, and for her to give an outline of what the service that she's going to provide to the players.
Emma, I was doing a bit of research on you. You tell us about your involvement with the American football team from Ireland. This is something that I used to be mad into NFL, and I was always wondering what went on in Ireland. Then I kind of half lost interest, but I was like, maybe you can enlighten me on what's going on there.
I'm going to need to know who you support in the NFL before
Jets.
I answer.
No good.
Just all
my
teams. Accept it.
Yeah, every team I support is basically shite. Like, Galway Noises have never won anything. The Jets. Jets won the Super Bowl 80 in 60. Don't know, Joe Namath.
Wrong man, though.
But anyway, yeah.
So it's not just one team in Ireland. There's 22 or 23 teams in the country, six in Dublin, two in Belfast, and then pretty much every other team has a county to themselves. There's three divisions. The team that I coach is the South Dublin Panthers, based in Lucan. And we're in the semi-finals for the first time in club history this Sunday coming, and we're going down to Cork to play the current national champions. I'm pumped.
Could an NFL game come to Ireland, do you think?
No, because I'm pretty sure there's some contracts in place that London will be the only place to hold them. But the college games.
I remember Notre Dame being over here, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a four-year deal now from 2020 onwards. I think it's 4 years for college games to be hosted in Ireland. So
your role in the PFAI, player development.
I guess
it's kind of self-explanatory, but is this a new departure for the PFAI? Or?
I think it's something that's been on the agenda for quite a while. Mm. But actually being able to offer the service on a full-time basis is certainly new. I'm not sure that everyone really understands what player development is. I think when I'm talking to people who are maybe involved in the league at the moment, they're assuming that I'm talking about developing their skills as a player, because everyone's familiar with the talent pathway, and that's what they consider player development. Whereas what I'm looking at is really their off-field stuff. It's about their life after sport, it's about their education, it's about their own personal development.
Yeah, actually, we were just talking off air about Garrett Farrelly, and he's been kind of in the news a lot. And Ado, this is so significant, and players having something outside of football to sort of look forward to and to be able to develop as people as well.
It's huge because the scare stories after football, for the not League of Ireland level or low level, for high level in terms of what happens to players in terms of losing, and usually it's the divorce that cleans them out. The amount of players, particularly in the US, you know all about this, the amount of athletes who are on $20 million a year contracts and end up penniless because they can't manage their money. The problem with football, and it's probably the same with American sports, is that they go into it as children. You become more or less a footballer at 15, and you leave still with the mentality of a 15-year-old, and the training and the attributes and what other people learn in life when you go through college. Most footballers, they won't have had a, correct me if I'm wrong, Stephen, they won't have had a summer job because they're so focused on football. The things you learn in life, you go to college, you do projects, you know, you do internships, all of that. You haven't done that as a footballer, and then at 33, 34, you don't know what to do. And the problems after, in terms of mental health, in terms of money, how you deal with that. And I know Stephen's spoken with this before. I think you mentioned that you worried that all players were going into becoming personal trainers or working in gyms. And that was a worry because there's only so much business.
Market.
Yeah. So somebody like Garrett Farrelly, a lot of some players have done different things.
Garrett's gone down the legal route.
Yeah. So he went back, he trained as a lawyer, and obviously he had his own, part of that was sparked by his own difficulties as a player in terms of problems he had with Cork City and a realization of that. And not enough players do that. To me, it's mental. So meeting somebody like Emma and having that spelled out to you, and those players need to read more, but a lot of them they're told all this and they don't understand. They don't take it in mind. You think it'll never happen to you. You think you won't be the one who gets divorced. You won't be the one who's finished at 27 because of injury. You think you won't be the one who has, mental health problems. You think it won't be you.
Emma, as well, like, say if you're a Dublin-based player now, you're being, I guess you might have a place that the club has given you, or you're renting a place. After football, you're living in Dublin. It's an extremely expensive place to live. You're probably not earning a fortune in the League of Ireland. You got to have something to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to have a plan for afterwards. I think what we're seeing in the club visits is that most people are looking at us and nodding, saying, I actually haven't thought about it at all, let alone have a plan. So what I'm trying to tell athletes is that I have a list of everything you should be thinking about, and you just have to drop me an email and say, I want to meet, and I'll take it from there. I'll guide you through the process. That's kind of what this role is. And it'll be really practical things like what social support you have, what's your current level of education, what's your long-term career plan? Are you more interested in a career or do you just want a job so that you can, have free time to pursue other interests? And then what education level matches your aspirations, salary or career-wise? And it's just really practical stuff.
The stats were the one thing, Johnny, that really sort of drove us to get a full-time person in. I think Ollie might have mentioned on this show.
Ollie Cahill, yeah.
Yeah, 30% of players that only had a junior cert of the 198 that we surveyed in the Premier Division. Emma, we've done another one early part of this year where 45% of players hadn't thought about what was happening at the end of their careers. 45%. That's a hugely worrying figure for us.
A lot of time to be thinking as well,
But the reality, that's the figures we've got.
It's the life to live.
Yeah, so Emma's then put another survey together now to tease out them a little bit more on what's the expectation of what they want to do. And Emma's working hard on that now, has done in the last couple of weeks. And And look, this isn't going to happen overnight. And the reality from our perspective is this is one person, Emma. We've 300 professional footballers. So for this really to work, we're going to need assistance from government. We're going to need assistance from the federation to roll this out. If you look at the rugby, who have less professional players, they have a player development manager in each province. We've got one to cover 300. We've been driving the length and breadth of Ireland for a week and a half now just to try and cover it.
It's nearly impossible.
And Ollie Cattle, the three of us have been
trying. Road trips.
Yeah, it's tough. But the reality on this is if we really want to build it, the long-term plan is to have one in every province and two in Leinster. That would be the ideal scenario. And we have to be able to prove that it works. Emma's role is to prove that this will work, that it will assist players. We would love it to expand it out to young lads going to England to ensure they're prepared for what's going, to set networks up with families that who've had kids who've gone abroad, that the network is there, that families can understand the troubles or the problems that young players face when they're coming back, that network is there for them, and that we have that assistance in place. So these are the long-term stuff, but short-term, we have to start working on the ground now. And as Aidan said as well, Gareth Farley's an example. Gareth's now with Stuart Gilhooly earlier now on CAS. The two of them are on CAS together on the FIFPro's banner. And I would have represented Gareth in issues at Cork, and he was somebody who saw that football got him so far. He saw the problems he had in his own career and wanted to give a little bit back. So the one thing that sort of come out, and Emma might go into it now, is mentoring. It's been interesting that players feel more that they could open up to former players who are mentors of theirs to talk them through what they've done to go in their sort of at the end of their career. So if you want to just give a little bit on that.
Yeah, I suppose we've been at the club visits asking people would they be interested in speaking to somebody who's already retired about what they're up to and how they went about it. And would they also be interested in mentoring a younger player about the transition into the sport? And I think about 72% of them have come back now out of the 110 or so that we've spoken to and said they absolutely would love to speak to somebody who's already been through it. Now, there's a few people who are saying, I really want to be matched up properly with somebody who's doing something like I did, but other people saying I want to hear from somebody who didn't do it right and how that came about.
I think the key is getting people to listen. Last year I had a long conversation with Keith Tracy who did it all, played for Ireland, played in the Premier League, played a bit of League of Ireland when he came back and was more or less out of football by 28, 29. And his experience, he was in Blackburn, in the first team at Blackburn. They brought two players in. So Premier League player on a very good wage. They brought two people in from the PFA who weren't financial advisors. They were ex-pros to talk to them about the pitfalls of money, how to manage your money. And he said he was staring out the window. He was looking at his watch. He just thought, I want to get out of here. He didn't want to listen, even though it was for his benefit. And he's looking back 10 years, a few years later, looking back, why didn't I listen? They were there trying to help me. But my footballer attitude was, get me out of here. This is like school. I didn't want to be here. So getting them to listen is key. To me, the FAI, you're filling a role that the FAI should have. There's not a lot of debate at the moment where the FAI should be doing this. People often say there's no register of players when they come back from England. There's no form you fill in. There's nowhere to fill in. Also, the role, and I spoke to Owen Hand about this recently, his own difficulties with the FAI when he was career guidance officer, a position that was more or less ended when they cancelled his contract in 2012. That position was never properly filled. There may be somebody in there who are fulfilling those roles, but there isn't a full-time career guidance officer in the FAI, somebody who you can go to the battles that Owen Hand fought for players in terms of bullying, money, racism, all the problems that players experience in England, homesickness, loneliness, difficulties, trying to get education. You want to do your education, but your UT manager is giving you grief because you're spending time studying that you should be playing. That's a role that the FAI should be filling, and that's a role that's been lost for seven, eight years now.
Yeah. How do you finance Emma's role then within the PFA?
Yeah, we're lucky that FIFPro ourselves and seven other countries got together through an EU Mind the Gap campaign. So funding, there was some funding that came from that, and then we part funded as well for 18 months. So obviously our goal here is to, on the 18 months that Emma's with us, is to look at revenue streams that we can bring in to ensure the role is long term, and then can we build on it and have more people as player development managers. But back to what Aidan was saying, he's right. Not only was Owen Hand's role around, and it's key, this is not only was his role around developing players, his role was around assisting clubs in regards to training compensation. And part of the presentation that went on the weekend was talking about how clubs can be better in regards to getting training compensation for the talent that we move out of our country. We don't have anybody negotiating on behalf of half of our clubs. A number of our clubs don't even realise that they're entitled to the money. And Owen Hand's role within that,
whatever, which is staggering, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But with him gone, and I'm not here to say whether he should be gone or shouldn't be gone. That's nothing to do with it. I'm talking about the role. And the role needs, there definitely needs to be somebody in that role, but somebody assisting the clubs and right to educate them into what they're entitled to when the players go abroad.
Mm. I've often wondered, it's this kind of crude analogy here, but if North Korea's system fell apart in the morning, I think it would be absolute chaos how the country would recover after the years of what North Korea has been. At a more local level, what is it like trying to deal with the post sort of the FEI that we knew and the chaos that seems to be the last few months and trying to recover and get us off to some sort of secure footing? Because I imagine just there's so much there that was didn't happen, should have happened, but didn't happen. Maybe stuff that was sort of swept under the carpet, and obviously your own relationship with them was seemingly poisonous, really.
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of weeks. It's interesting because Emma's only started. She only sees, gee, these people are very helpful, aren't they? Everybody's coming into the office where they're talking, there's developments, you look like you're going to have two positions on council and all this stuff. And obviously, I'm trying to see through Emma how she sees it, and then I'm conditioned in such a way to be so suspicious of the FAO. I'm just conditioned that way because of 12 years of what we've gone through. And it has been difficult. There's a part of me that says that we have to start working together to bring it forward. I have to try and get better working conditions for our members. We have to try and bring the game forward. But that niggles in your mind that is this real now? So the people I'm dealing with, the Noel Mooneys, the Donald Conways, the ones I'm seeing face to face now and I deal with every day, is this real? And in the short term right now, yes, it does. It looks like we have a new FAI, a different way. But that has to be proven over a longer period of time.
You have to be very, very wary, though. Like, no, Noel Mooney and Conway, it's not like they've come from a different jurisdiction.
Yeah, everything you have to be, right? But I'm just saying right now, the dealings that I have had in the last weeks and months are dramatically different. I can't tell you how.
Could they be any worse?
They couldn't have been any worse. We're starting at a low base, by the way. Mm. I agree with you on that. But you can only work with what I'm dealing with now. And it is a million times better, right? So that's where that piece of it is. But have we made huge progress in things so far? We're making little steps, but we're making steps forward. The difference seemed to be the weekend, and I was there, and Aidan was there for the press conference afterwards. It's the very first time I've ever been in a room with the clubs, ever, which is a starting point. So we're starting to get a relationship where we understand what the other side, what the difficulties they face, and they're understanding the difficulties that we face. But that has never been the case. Everybody was divided, and everybody was seen to go head-to-head on everything because that seemed to be the regime that we were in. The regime now is a difficult one because you're conditioned in such a way to believe, now we're all going to work together for one goal, which is always the way it should have been. And for me to say that, people are probably listening going, should that not the way it's supposed to work?
Yeah.
But it didn't, right? Now I know that people are going to be, and the Donald Conways and the Noel Mooneys, they're in now. I'm dealing with Noel directly now. And he has a way about him to disarm people. It's just,
is that a good or a bad thing?
Well, he's been able to get people into a room over 2 days the weekend, and there was no massive row. It was us all talking about what way are we going forward. The club's realising where they are in the food chain. So where you're Dundalk, you're going to compete for the league. If you're Cabinteely, you're going to be a feeder club potentially into Shamrock Rovers. So there seemed to be in the room a better understanding where we all are. That hasn't been there before. So look, it's little steps. Nobody's saying that this is going to be the utopia, but we have to take the step somewhere.
Just on that, it was David Rowe, the Sligo treasurer, who was speaking on the RT podcast today, though, and he referenced that divide and conquer with Stephen. Again, this is symptomatic of an autocratic regime. Divide and conquer in a football family that really should be all towards pushing towards to make football better in this country. And that's what was basically taught that was the best way for the organisation to work was to divide and conquer. And that's the mess we're left with now.
The ethos of the FAI for 10, 12 years was not just in terms of relation to the league, in terms of everything else, was we know, we tell you what to do. And if there was any dissent, a disagreement was seen as weakness. And anybody who was a dissenter disagreed was, as you can see, people like Owen Hand and Brian Kerr. There was no voice for difference. And what is encouraging, I was in the room on Sunday when for the press conference afterwards, and the people who were there, Stephen was there representing players, Niamh O'Mahony was there representing supporters. Stephen Henderson was there representing the managers. I think over the weekend there was a representative of the referees. That those groups, they're key stakeholders in the game, and they had no voice. So if you're a manager and you're having an issue, or as Stephen Henderson did, over maybe not getting paid, you have an issue over your separation from your club, or your problem with a pitch that you go to play somewhere and the pitch is unplayable, but you still have to go up and play. Where do you go? Players will still say about facilities, the lack of toilets, is there hot water, no showers, know, food after training, where can they go? And that it's blindingly obvious that they should have had a role and had a voice for 10 years, and they didn't, because the ethos of the organization was, we know what we're doing, don't you dare. And these words, bringing the game into disrepute, was the most chilling. You're talking about North Korea. That's what happened to managers. That's what happened to players when the FAI people, their job was to scour managers' program notes. I mean, that's how...
Enemy of the state type
job. That's what it was. And that somebody's job was that, to get all the club programs on a Monday morning, go through them and see what managers said. And I remember Tony Cousins was threatened with bringing the game into disrepute because of a comment he made about facilities. That was North Korean. That was a Stalinist attitude. And if that changes, and to give people a voice, and to give managers, so is it Stephen Henderson representing, I know it's broken, this is the third formation of the League Managers Association, it's nothing like the one they have in England, but that they have a voice, so they have a member who has been sacked by a club, or hasn't been paid up, or has an issue over, they take him in his club car, that he has somewhere to go, in, and he can be in the room, as the players can now, so it is positive, but whether it lasts and whether it's meaning, we still have to see.
What was it like for you as a journalist? Because I'm not a football journalist week in, week out. You were, and you had to deal with the FAI as it was. What was it like? Because it seemed hard to get any actual story out there, because it was just seemed such a closed shop.
It was Stalinist, because this is the way, and you know, situation at the moment where it was AGM a couple of years ago, Kenny, where, you know, the security around the media... in the hotel, they were kept on a separate floor, they were held back by security. You wouldn't see it at a Sinn Féin RDS, like, yeah, or a DUP annual conference. It was absolutely, that's the way everybody was kept at and players, everybody else, there was the ethos was, we know what we're doing. That came from the top, that was defined by the top, it filtered down from the board through the council, we know what we're doing. Anybody who dissents about that, the players were, the fact that Stephen worked in the same building as John Delaney, and was it 6 years he went away without having a meeting, where nobody had, when player the reaction when players piped up or whatever, said something, the same with the women's team, the FAI's response to the women's team issue was not to deal with the issue in terms of how the women were being treated, it was the fact that it became public, that was their anger. And you had a situation where a letter from, signed by three FAI officials, threatening their futures with the women's team because they went public with their stance. That is why we're in trouble, because everything, we have to keep everything in house, and that can't become part of this new thing where Stephen says he wants to deal with people. You can't get back to everything where it's a group of men, and it is mainly men. I know Niamh Mahoney was there. You can't get back to a situation where a group of men get together in rooms and sort everything out from football. You need to have dissent. You need to have, and not everybody's going to get on. It was mentioned at the meeting at the weekend, one thing that was brought up, for example, that wasn't agreed on, was it was suggested by some of the smaller clubs that the European revenue be filtered down to the other clubs, that a portion of it be set aside so everybody gets a bit of it. So that was shot down by the bigger clubs, because they feel, we've worked hard, Shamrock Rovers and Cork City, Dundalk, St Pat's will feel that we worked hard to get into Europe. Why should we give it to a club who underachieved or who failed? So, but at least talk about it, at least debate it, instead of having decided from the top.
But you have to be very, very wary. Stephen said he's conditioned that there isn't the change that needs to be there, because, you know, Noel Mooney has obviously strong links to Delaney from the past. There are other characters who are still knocking around, and people who are, I would argue, are rightly fearful that this radical change won't happen.
No, you need a change of ethos, a change of thought, that if your institution, you could see that in the Oireachtas hearing, the performance of the FAI people that day was absolutely shambolic, one of the worst public performances by any organisation I've seen in a decade, because their institution was to protect the institution. It was a bit like the attitude of the Catholic Church during the scandals. Don't deal with you. Defend the institution. That we're right at the end of the day. Instead of saying, you know what, actually, why is there no dissenter? Why is everybody in the board? Why are we unanimously approving things? The FAI, and what worries me a bit about the changes, and it's been mentioned already that the governance review has to be unanimously approved. The FAI have been unanimously approving things for 15 years, and look where it got us. So you have to have voice. You have to have dissent. Maybe you don't get your way. You know, people have been on committees where you speaker, you mightn't get your way. At least you get the right to have your say. And if you have your say, you're not removed from the committee. You're still back at the committee next time. So it does need a change in ethos. And if the FAI revert to type, it doesn't look good, the fact that the incoming president, it will be elected unopposed. The FAI will argue his reasons for it, but still the optics of somebody who's been on the board for 14 years coming in unelected as president of the new reformed FAI, the optics of that do not look good. So it does need a change in ethos where you accept dissent, you accept criticism, and that, you know, if a player pipes up and says, you know, I'm not, a group of players say, you know, we played in X ground last week and there was no hot water, or that there was no, the toilet was blocked, or we couldn't use the toilet. that you have somewhere to go when the people say, you know what, you're right, I'm going to listen to you. Instead of the reaction for 10 years has been to punish the player for saying that, to punish the manager for saying something in his club notes, to listen and to say, you know what, you're right, mm. we got it wrong there. That ground shouldn't have been improved.
Yeah, and that goes to, and that really goes to the heart of it. There has never been a platform for players, for managers, for coaches, for supporters. There's been no platform. The FAU haven't provided you with a platform. Now, the new structures, if come true, mean that supporters, players, have a platform now. So you have a platform where there's true council, and you have football management committees, and you have other committees, that there's now a platform to bring forward issues. And in a new league, what I was worried about the weekend was the clubs go off now at the end of July, I think it's 30 or whatever, meet up. They come back then, having talked about what the presentation they got the weekend.
That's the A clubs.
Yes, again. Exactly. So they go out and come back. They cannot then come back and decide, yeah, we're going to do this with the league. This has to be done in consultation with everybody. And that's my little concern, is you have to keep the stakeholders around and keep them part of it. But the FAO should have been facilitating a game that we are all part of. Not a dictatorship, but that what was going on. It should have been that we were all part of the decision making and felt part of it. Okay, you're never going to get your own way all the time. But you are part of the decision making. Like, I want the standard for our league. We want minimum amount of professionals at every club. We want players paid, holiday pay. We want the basics so that when players, young players come and look at our sport, they go, you know, that's real. Like, that's a proper, I can make a proper living. There's a minimum wage. Like, that's the stuff we're asking for. Like, I think Aidan wrote at the weekend, he said clubs will be scared by the minimum wage, and he's probably right. Like, but isn't that a terrible indictment of the league, that we'd be scared by the minimum wage?
Unfortunately, though, if you have a league that has no prize money and no TV money, clubs, yeah, like, as Roe was saying, the business model for Sligo Rovers is obviously basket case.
It's crazy.
But there's no money coming into the league. So yeah, how is a club in a town of 20,000 people, or trying to pay, whatever, 600 or 700 quid a week to a player, whatever it is, it doesn't make any sense. So they have to cobble together money. Yeah. How have you found it so far, Emma, talking to players? Like, you're coming in at an interesting time anyway.
I suppose, thankfully, money is out of my remit. So I don't have to talk to people about their wage or their contract or their working conditions. I'm really preparing them for their life after the sport. It is a concern for them when I'm looking through the forums. People are worried about providing for their families in their life after sport. But I suppose I'm talking to them about, you know, what's your next step? What sort of lifestyle do you want? Are you going to be happy sitting at a desk 9 to 5, or do you need to be out and about? I think the guys have been quite clear with the players that I'm there to talk to them about their personal development, and they're there for the contract stuff.
What did you make of the two of you? What did you make of the weekend?
The seminar took 2 days. From Eric's perspective, very positive. I think I was excited, and you said it there, Johnny. We've been told forever that a league isn't good enough. You're not going to be able to get a TV deal. Can't get a title sponsor. This is what we've been told for years, like, by the people who run the game in the FAO. Look, you're lucky to have what you have.
I think Neil O'Riordan say that Mooney even said that the TV money could actually be more than what Kieran Lucid was saying in that.
Yeah,
he could be even more ambitious. I think that was in the piece today.
Yeah, he did. But that's what we've been told for. So you're told that this is, and you're lucky to be getting what you're getting.
If you're told that often enough as well, you do believe it.
So then we got two presentations the weekend. One, which was Niall Quinn's, which is a more resource-based idea. And then Kieran Lucid, who gave a really, really, really good presentation with details of figures and facts. And I thought it was fantastic, his presentation. But the two groups have some really, really strong people involved in it. And it excites you when you see people that are on both sides of it, who are proper people within their business, proper people within sport, have a real interest. And you're sitting there, as I was, as a representative of players, feeling proud of, for once sitting in the room going, you know what, this actually is real. Like, this
not
is
downtrodden.
Not downtrodden, not being told that you can't have this. You've been told, you've been shortchanged for years. And Mooney said the same, been shortchanged for years. We need to get it better, and we can get it better. And it excited me. We've been at the clubs today, we're down in Sligo today, and the players are, and the players obviously in Derry, are the only over the moon to say, yeah, we're going to have new grounds to go to potentially. We're going to have potentially earn more money. Our games are going to be on TV. We have a proper industry. We have potential of a proper industry. Now, look, we're still a bit away from it. There's still a good bit of work to be done on both projects. I think that's clear. There's a lot of work still to be done. But suddenly, we're talking about the league in a positive way, which is something that we haven't done for seven or 8 years.
Edo, you have a very healthy scepticism about all of this.
Well, one of the problems is, and it's part of the whole background of Irish football, because Irish football has been divided for so long. You have the schoolboy section, junior amateur football section, League of Ireland, the three main groups. But it was said by, I think it was Martin Connolly at the weekend, that from Dundalk, that the League of Ireland has to be front and centre of the new of football in Ireland. And there's when people in schoolboy clubs in particular hear that, they raise up, because they feel that they have run their they've run their scene well for 50 years. They provided all the players for the international team. It's the League of Ireland clubs who've gone bust, who wasted all the money on players. So again, you're would we start from here? You know, you're starting from a very difficult starting point. There is scepticism, and that will raise people up when schoolboy people hear that front and centre. They go, hang on, where did Jeff Hendrick and Robbie Brady, where did all these guys come from? They come from League of Ireland clubs. They came from the schoolboy clubs. We're the ones who produced these. So that is a culture change you're looking at.
What do you make of Lucid and Quinn and all of the, you know, proposals and consortiums and so on?
There's good elements in both of them. I think the Quinn one is still very sketchy on the details, and the strength of the Quinn one seems to be the people involved. He has some very, very heavy hitters and people with good ideas, and new people coming in from the outside who have an interest in football. The detail, I haven't seen enough detail yet. The Lucid one, I think, is interesting, but I think it's been too rushed. I think thoughts of having an all-Ireland league, it's not going to be all-Ireland, all-Ireland league, we need to be careful, I think it's fanciful to think 21.
You think fanciful?
I think, well, you know, see what happens on October 31st. We have no idea what state relations you're talking about having. One of the suggestions is that in this new company, that the offices will be in Belfast. I think that's a concession already, because that was the setting for football when football was set up in Ireland, with offices or with meetings in Dublin. But how will that work? You know, when if we do have a hard border, I think it's a bad time to.
We wouldn't want lads rushing to the podcast and held over the border
trying to bring in change. There are elements there, but I think trying to rush. I think an acceptance.
Do you want an All-Ireland league?
I think it should be looked at, but I think you need. I think it's too southern heavy. I don't think they have spoken to people in the Irish League. I don't think they've spoken to enough of them, enough detail. Certainly feedbacks from supporters in the Irish League in the North seems to be they're not so keen on it. They like things the way they are. Now, maybe it needs to change as well. The Irish League isn't thriving. They're I think fourth bottom in terms of European performances. They're going to lose one of the European places. So can you allow stagnate? Do they need to be forced to say, look, we need to change here. We're a small island. We need All-Ireland League. I don't think it's essential. I don't think it's people don't stay up at night looking for an All-Ireland League. I don't think it's necessarily the cure. The other things that we're talking about, the basic standards, having a TV deal, this insane idea where you look at matches on Sky, you might have a match on Friday night from League 1, League 2, you know that club have got a very hefty match fee from Sky for showing their game. League of Ireland is probably the only league in Europe where it costs you money, because you're forced to play. I think it was last year, Fanarps had to play Dundalk at 5 o'clock on a Saturday to suit TV. It costs them money in terms of the gate. You don't get a fee.
Yeah.
All these things have to change. Look at other things first. Look at the standards that you know, the standards of grounds, you know, the players that are looked after. Supporter, that's very important as well. Supporters have a voice in this, because they're the ones who know what it's like to be at the away end in the Shed End in Dalymount, where the facilities aren't great, or the section for away fans in Oriel Park. I know they spruced it up a bit recently, but still, that those facilities aren't good enough, and that those supporters. So they're the things that I would look at more than. I don't think an All-Ireland League is necessarily going to save it, but it depends what's behind it. If there is money behind it, if there is a genuine TV deal that can be looked at, but an All-Ireland League isn't necessarily going to save Irish football.
We can't stay with what we've got, though. Stay with what we've got.
The only thing is, though, what we've got is the SSC or Tricity sponsor putting in money that we don't even know what they're putting into the league. We've no TV money, and the league is probably actually, clubs are probably actually losing money if you add up what they're putting into licensing fees and all that and what they're getting back. That's how impoverished they were and how downtrodden they were and how they were used to being treated like absolute crap by the FAI. And it's utterly disgraceful that the league has been shat upon by the top and let run. And now you just hear little things like, oh, we could get £1 million for a TV deal, and people think this is fanciful. And I'm like, how is this fanciful? It's 160 million for 5 years in the SPL. Take away Scott, like, if Celtic and Rangers apart, the SPL is little or no better than the League of Ireland, to my mind. 160 million, a league that a lot of people frown upon, and we were getting nothing, absolutely nothing. You've Google, Amazon, Facebook, you've all these tech giants with billions of euro in this country, where it's a very rich country, and we think that it's okay that this league can survive on Sligo Rovers fans basically putting money together.
Yeah, I think the transparency was the one word that came out the weekend, and I think from what Noel Mooney, as general manager, said, that there will be complete transparency. What has gone on before wasn't acceptable, and that there will be complete transparency. I think the clubs echoed it over the weekend that they need transparency. They need to know what's going on. They need to know what monies are coming in, when they're going to receive them, when they come out. And I think that was what came out for me anyway, sitting there for the 2 days, was that the clubs want to know exactly what's happening. You just cannot stick with what we've got, okay? Now, I would have been sceptical of an All-Ireland League before I spoke to Kieran Lewis and before I saw the presentations the weekend. But from what I see in the weekend, if the IFA and NILF I think he's already spoken to a number of clubs in R2. If they were on board for it, this has a real chance. If they come on board, I think the FAI will go along with the clubs if our clubs want it. I think UEFA, from what you see, would buy into it if everybody wants it. Now, there has been trials of this with women's football in Belgium and Holland, and it didn't go quite successful because the Dutch teams were too strong. There's an argument to hearsay that we need to be protected, that our clubs, the League of Ireland clubs, wouldn't become too strong and the Northern teams would fall out of relegation and promotion. They've built in a mechanism to try and ensure that that doesn't happen. So, look, we do need a change. There's no two ways around it. It has to change. You can't stick with what we've got. And the next couple of weeks and months, and I think it will be a short time. This isn't going to roll on for 6 and 7 months, not knowing. I think there's going to be a decision on this, I would think, before the cup final.
Do you think it'll happen in 2021 that there'll be an All-Ireland League? If you were to bet going to the head job?
No, if you said to me 6 months, I would have said no chance. Absolutely no chance. But what I've seen and the appetite in the room, again, I was down in Sligo today and David Rowe spoke to the players with me there. I mean, there's an appetite there for it, absolutely.
Edo?
I don't think so. I think Brexit wasn't on the table. I think it'd be easier, but nobody knows what's going to happen. I think to rush into it without knowing the implications of how it's going to go. A lot depends on whether UEFA are on board. European place is going to be huge. How do you handle the European places?
Three UEFA people at the thing at the weekend.
Yeah. So do they make a concession to say, you know, you're looking at it's 8 at the moment. We'll be down to 7 between the two leagues. You know, UEFA can't sustain that. Now, again, but Europe is changing. You know, Mooney spoke at the weekend about
the third tier.
Europa League 2. Is there a way of doing that? It could happen, but I don't think it'll happen in the time frame we're looking for. But I think Kieran Lucid, I don't think he's welded to that, as in it has to happen by 1st of January 2021.
He isn't a very patient man. I know from, like, he's move.
No, he doesn't want to wait 10 years. But I think if he sees movement, if he sees progress, I don't think there has to be, you know, Shamrock Rovers playing Linfield in the first game of the new season on whatever, the 3rd of March 2021. I don't think that's essential. But I think what Kieran Lucid, he doesn't want to spend 10 years going back to folks groups and everything else. He wants to see how much interest there is. He has people behind him. But I do think that you can't. I just think you have to be very, very, very careful, particularly dealing with Northern Ireland, that they have their traditions. Some of the clubs up there are better run. You look at the resources that Linfield have. I think it has huge potential. We don't think about, you know, the Gaelic football as there's no element of cross border. You know, Dublin think nothing of the same going to play Tyrone as it's going to play Galway. It's not a big deal. What we're changing here is 100 years of history. They have strong traditions in the Irish League. I don't sense any great appetite from people up there, from supporters, but I think maybe they need to be what if you show them what it can be. You're talking about matches live on TV, a proper TV deal in proper stadiums with sponsors who can roll in behind it, not what you have at the moment. The model at the moment is clearly broken in Northern Ireland because their performance in Europe are poor. They will lose one of the European places. The model isn't good. The model down south isn't good because, you know, what's happened over the last 10 years. So it can be. But I think if Kieran Lucid gets a promise from people that it could happen, that the gauge level of interest maybe, but I wouldn't expect to see... to see it by 2020. But somebody mentioned that partition, the fact that it's 100 years of partition, that as if it's something celebrating. So that maybe that's one of your problems at the start. Do you celebrate or regret the fact that we have partition? So
bit of column A, bit of column B.
Well, you've read before you even play. So you know,
it was funny though, being up there lately, like outside the Crusaders ground, like festooned in Union Jacks, because it's that type of an area ahead of the 12th. And in Ballymena, there was a big row that there were tricolours erected around near the showgrounds by, I think that might be more of a nationalist part of Ballymena, which is predominantly not nationalists, but all that nonsense is still going on over there, and that's something that we're not used to down here. But
the prize money, though, just to touch on something, the prize money, as bad as it is in our country, it's 40 grand to win their league. Like it's even worse than ours. Like. Mm. So the figures that Lucin is plugging into this thing, it is like 300 grand for the bottom team in the league. Europe doesn't come into this from a prize money point of view. Like.
Just on, we'll have to wrap up shortly, but let's get back to reality here. Limerick, you told me, hadn't paid a player for the guts of 10 weeks, quite recently. It's absolutely scandalous that this is allowed to go on. In my view, Limerick should be practically thrown out of the league for this. Mm. Players having to leave, players, you know, with such an uncertain future. How bad is it?
Well, we've worked hard in the last 6-7 weeks. We've been up and down. There's been other issues there as well, which have been fairly well publicised as well, that we were dealing with. So as it stands now, Limerick are amateur. So from a Unia perspective, our role with them is finished for now. We will continue to pursue the club for the wages that are owed to a couple of players. So in the main, everything is done. Obviously, Will Fitzgerald has moved on, Conor Ellis has moved on, Killian Brewer has moved on, and the other guys have moved on. So the club will move on an amateur basis to the end of the season, and then the decision will be made then from there.
The mad thing is, Edo, they're still very much on the cusp of finishing fourth if things go well for them.
But this is the key as well, that should a club be allowed enter a professional league on an amateur basis when clearly their payments being made, they're not amateurs, it's not Gaelic footballers who are doing it for the love of it. There are payments being made. I'm sure Stephen's far more detailed implications for if you're an amateur player in terms of PRSI and stamps and everything else and your record that's key that Limerick are allowed. And again, what worries me is with the change in the FA, because Frank Gavin was asked about who the most senior official in the league was asked about this recently with the issue with the Sean Russell. And Frank Gavin's attitude in the FAI was, well, that's between the club and the player. You know, a player who'd been left with a substantial bill for his medical treatment. Now, the club come back and said, okay, I know there's different versions of it in terms of where he got they wanted treatment somewhere else and it was done in a different place. But if the attitude of the new FAI is still, but that's between, if a player is left to deal with the club himself, that shouldn't be. You should not have, to my mind, you know, the FAI should not be accepting registrations from a club entering players on an amateur basis when you know they're being paid mileage or expenses or whatever it is. That has to stop.
Yeah, we don't even have the time to actually talk about it.
Because we've 40% of the players in the league are amateur.
Yeah, I saw that quote, which is like that's something that, you know, you really need to improve on at the very least.
And that's why what you spoke about earlier, Johnny, the TV deal and more money into the league changes that. But like the majority of teams outside of the top three in the first division are amateur, really. That's the reality. And we've a number of, like, you look at the UCD last night, they have a different model. I was talking to Dick Shakespeare, they've done a brilliant job, like UCD have, but the majority of players there would be amateur as well. Yeah. They have on scholarships and whatever else, and a lot of players at Finn Harps would be amateur because they have a different philosophy as well. We're trying to get to a stage where we want to have a professional league with a minimum amount of professional players at every club. We're not talking about full-time pros, and part-time and full-time, but we don't have a standard. So you can be Wexford Youth, and over the year you played in the Premier Division. Like, the last player in England to play in the top tier as an amateur is 1967. Like, yet we have rafts of them everywhere. Like.
Yeah.
So we do really have a decision to make, like you right and said, we have a decision to make on what are we? What is Irish football? Are we a professional league? Are we going to have a professional league and have a fourth division which is just made up of amateur players trying to make it into the Premier? Why are we as a league? We don't know. And we need to make that decision, whether we have an All-Ireland League, whether we have Niall Quinn come in, whatever. Somewhere, at some stage, we have to stand up and say, right, this is what professional football is in Ireland.
And Emmett, what kind of, I suppose, attitude have you gotten from the players in general in terms of their well-being and how they see their careers in Ireland?
I suppose they're starting, I think, to maybe to think about what's next for them. But really, the key message is that they haven't yet thought about it. There's a few people who have their education sorted and they're talking to me more about what their career planning is, whereas other people are really saying, I just need a job. I need something lined up for their off season or for their future. And like I said earlier, concerned about their family and providing for them. I suppose the whole idea is it's a personalised service. So while we're out in club visits and we're meeting people in a group, what this is really about is sitting down one-to-one and taking stock of where you're at right now and what your goals are for the future. And then my role is to help coach you through that effectively.
Yeah, I'd implore all players to listen, because I think we all remember being in school and thinking that we'd be young forever, and all of a sudden then you're like, you know, it actually doesn't work like that. Edo, I'd love to spend an hour about the paucity of players who can actually score goals in Ireland in general at all levels at the moment. The results from the weekend: Derry 0, UCD 0, Sligo 0, Waterford 0, third successive air game live that ended up 0-0, UCD 1, Bowes 0. So the two lads with the Bowes hats on here to a degree, Bowes 100% record against Rovers this season, against everyone else 50%. I can't get my head around, now they've striker problems like everyone else at the moment.
I was there last night.
Were you in the melee, were you?
No, my son was not far away from it. He was hanging or taking out his flag.
He was going to have a go at Conor Kearns.
No. But look, UC were excellent. They were excellent. Held a high line, defensively strong. They haven't conceded a goal now in the three games.
How did they concede against Derry from the highlights? But things are falling for them.
Yeah, they're organised. I think the couple of signs they've made, from Sligo, has given that
Keeney,
bit of, in the middle. He was excellent last night, really strong. Bowes had an off night, didn't move the ball quick enough. There's an issue with the centre forwards. You see that Dinny being out has caused them an issue. They didn't move the ball quick enough for me. I've been at majority of the games this season. It was just one of them nights, and it happens at times, and it happens. And I think the frustration from the Bowls fans at the end is probably built on the fact that they're so close to Europe. They're so real. Like, Europe's just tipping away.
That's the thing, though, Edo. It's like, first of all, finishing fourth mightn't be good enough, but they don't have enough of a cushion, and they're not scoring goals at all. And my impression is Keith Long doesn't really know who to sign, because he just doesn't have anyone to sign.
Well, he's tried. He's tried to get, and he said everyone's looking for strikers. You look at, you know, Shamrock Rovers had to go within the league to get Cummins in, because Rovers don't have a free scorer. They don't have a Gary Twigg, Glenn Crowe, Stephen Gagan type figure scoring 20 goals a season. Cork City are struggling for that as well. It's a problem, as I referenced earlier on, it's a problem across the game.
Did you see the Indos team of the week? Eric Malloy was in the team of the week, and it was like two clubs, Bowes, Pats, asterisks on trial. He's in the team of the week, and he doesn't have a club.
But Marco Sullivan comes back and plays for Cork this weekend.
Yeah. And played quite well. Yeah. But like, anyway, that...
Well, it's just a problem across the game. I think I referenced earlier on, but people are wondering, is this a consequence of just years of the way we play, that maybe, you know, 4-4-2 or some division of that, but where... Across the game, you look at Ireland last year, the national team had, you know, scored 4 goals in 9 games, I think, at senior level in 2018. That it's a problem across Irish football, and how do you fix it? I don't know, but Keith Long has looked everywhere he's had a couple on trial. Eric Malloy, I don't know what's going to happen there. He went off and played for Pats after playing for Bowes. He'd a striker in from England who probably didn't really fit the bill, but there's just no strikers out there.
You're just waiting for this lad to come from like somewhere really like Uganda, like Charles Babas Livingston, or someone to save the League of Ireland and actually score goals, because there's just no good, there are almost no good strikers. A handful of good strikers in the league, but it's mad. Well, even Hoban hasn't had a great season.
But even look at St. Pat's, you know, less than, who would have thought that Pat's, with all the strikers they've had over the years, you know, less than a goal a game in the league, you know, played 25, scored 21.
But the unfortunate, this is hitting us in Europe now. One of the clubs scored in Europe last week. Yeah. One of the clubs scored, and Cork haven't scored in 7 games. Yeah. Dundalk haven't scored in 3 games in Europe off the top of my head.
That was a centre back who scored in 2 goals.
There you are. In any event, the fixtures the weekend, Derry against Sligo, Northwest Derby, Watford versus Finn Harps. Have we a live air game? Watford Harps is the live air game. I thought Watford did well actually against Sligo, considering the problems that they've had. Michael O'Connor grew into the game after giving away a penalty. Bowes against Pats on Sunday. Rovers against UCD. Hopefully Rovers will be through at that stage. First Division, very, very interesting results last week. And Bray Wanderers won Limerick 0. Limerick created next to nothing in the second half, unfortunately for them, despite having a man extra. Shells won, Cabinteely won. A big, big result for Cabo. They're very much in the hunt. Galway United, it was actually put to me that Galway United did well to maintain their five-point gap over Wexford by getting a nil-all draw down there. That's where we're at the moment. Cove 2, Athlone 1. Longford 2, Drogheda 1. This is the thing, lads. Like, to be, I know, Bowes, you're struggling for goals, but like, being third, beating Rovers every time you play them.
First of all, just clear something. I ain't a Bowes fan.
You're at every game.
That's because my son is a massive Bohemians
fan.
You're pro Bowes. I live in Glasnevin, not too far away from the ground. But Aidan will tell you, I'm not a Bohemians fan. It was one of the clubs I never played for. I would be a Pats fan. That would be the club that I'd be more aligned to, just in case people start taking them.
Back in the days when you shook hands with Frank Lampard when he was a mere West Ham player.
That's right. The last time he was in there, I was lucky enough to be the captain of Pats at the time, and the photograph just came up recently, which was nice to see. From my son's point of view, who doesn't think I ever kicked the ball out of my way,
Man with Frank Lampard?
He was a little bit impressed by that, so that was helpful.
Athlone Shells at the weekend, Cabinteely, Longford, Galway United, Bray Wanderers, Limerick versus Drogheda United. On Saturday then, Cove versus Wexford, Cove becoming a fully fan-owned club, and the First Division, in fairness to the system, it's been very, very interesting with still 6 teams very much in the hunt. Really could do with the situation where somebody's going to get relegated, just to make it exciting down the bottom. But lads, thanks a million for coming in. It's been great having you on as well, and exciting times ahead, interesting times ahead,
busy times ahead, I think.
We've got a couple of more club visits over the next couple of weeks, and look, as I said, thanks a lot for the invitation. I think it's important that players are aware of the service that's there and utilise it as best they can.
Yeah, and Rovers and Dundalk both going to get through, do you think?
Yes, I do. No, I do. I'm confident that Dundalk will get through. I think these have to open up a little bit at home, and I think Dundalk can pick them up. I think Michael Duffy is a key piece of it, and I think Rovers were excellent away from home. Rovers have a European piece about them. I think Jack Bourne's superb and was superb due to today, and I just think Rovers at home, they have a European thing about them. They have that bit of pedigree, and I do expect them to get through.
You'll be in Talaedo?
Italian. Yeah, can see Rovers getting through, yeah. So I think it's likely to be Limassol, I think, in the next round. So I said I wouldn't. They're not booking flights yet, but I can. I think Rovers should get through, and Dundalk just about get through.
As ever, I know that we work for them, but just thanks so much to Air Sport for providing the coverage from last week. Obviously, RT showed the Dundalk game, but the return leg is 5:30 kickoff on Wednesday, live on Air Sport, and Thursday, again, live on Air Sport, Shamrock Rovers versus Bran. I do think it's very important that at least one of these teams go through, because it'll be an absolute damn squib of a summer. We're doing as much as we can off the pitch and all that and trying to sort things, but unfortunately, it wouldn't look good if none of the clubs got through and with so few goals. Thanks a million for listening. That was in association with Air Sport and independent.ie. But there are limits to your life.